You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Sydney G. James. Sydney, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Sydney, we're going to talk about your show, Girl Raised in Detroit at Jane Lombard Gallery. And I'm really excited to talk about your work in this show, but I love the title, Girl Raised in Detroit. And so, of course, that's literal, and I want to speak to that a little bit, because your upbringing in Detroit and also your interaction with murals and Detroit itself is a big part of who you are and your art, correct?
It is. Yes, it is. I'm a girl born and raised in Detroit. I've lived other places, but I'm definitely back grounded at home, and I just venture out like I am right now in the New York City. So
tell me about Detroit and your murals there is what really, I mean, I know you went through a number of careers or are still involved with different careers, but the murals seem to really have taken off and become a big part of your identity, right, in the way that you interact with the city and the community there?
Yes, it is. I actually started the mural career in 2015. I didn't even know mural painting was a career until 2015. But it started, I started that just my street art practice started really with me taking over vacant lots in my neighborhood and erecting like abandoned doors and painting on that and recruiting artists to come with me and paint these things. And that eventually led to me painting in my first mural festival in 2015, Murals in the Market in Detroit. So that's really what got me started in all the public art, not just Detroit,
So how did that evolve, though, in Detroit itself, but also, I mean, talking about public art other places, public art seems to have so much to do with the community that is experiencing it, right? And an interaction
definitely
with it. Typically, art in galleries isn't typically about that because it could travel. But, yeah, what was
right,
the experience
exactly
of not only realizing murals as a career, but also it's a way of it's almost an activist gesture, right? You're working with a community.
Yeah, so the beauty about public art is it's a two-way conversation between the community and the artist, right? Or because the people of the communities in which I paint or which anyone public artist paints or contributes, they have to live with that work. So you don't want it to be not representational or not even representational, to have no connection to where you're actually placing the art. Like, it should resonate with the residents that actually live in those spaces. And that's something I quite enjoy. I love that two-way conversation. And the beauty of public art is you have unintentional viewership versus, like, if you are in a gallery space, those are intentional viewers. Like, I'm going to see this artist at this place and blah, 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 blah. So it's an expectation there. Whereas with public art, there is no expectation. Like, 3 to 10 seconds is your average viewership expectation from, like, a public art piece, like a mural, sculpture, whatever, like the drive-by, you know, the walker, the passerby. But you really do your job well as a public artist if you get that 3 to 10 seconds to stop and actually park their vehicles or stop walking to actually engage with your piece longer. You know what I'm saying? And even inquire about the art. That's really the beauty about public art. So, and the show, Girl Raised in Detroit, is really a combination of all of those practices in one place, because it actually was sparked by, I painted a mural down in Miami in December 2021 during the Art Basel, you know, when they have all of the street art, all of the art fairs. So I got commissioned to come down there to paint a wall outdoors, and it lived 2 days. Like, it was the first time I have ever experienced this, but it literally survived in that environment for 2 days. I spent 6 days painting it, and 2 days later, two different sets of individuals, like, destroyed my piece, like, with vandalism. Like, they went to the art supply store, bought some cans, and they literally just messed my stuff completely up. And what was birthed out of that was really this show, because the first piece of the show that I started working on was, it gave me the idea to recreate my murals that no longer exist, but as large pieces that should go to museums and galleries, like, because I wanted to find a safe space for the black body, really, because we already know figuratively the black body is not safe. A black person is not safe, or many people of color are not, and even being just a woman, you're not really safe. You're not really ever safe. But art should be safe. In my mind, it was supposed to be. But, like, literally that piece, which was a painting of a black woman, it lived for 2 days. And it really was the catalyst for this entire show. And this entire show is really reclamation of autonomy.
I like that. So what was the first piece in the show? Was that you said you started with? Was that the West Side Johnsons?
No, actually, so the first piece that I actually started was the recreation of the piece that got destroyed down in Miami, and it's called Serving Tea. And it's the largest piece of the show. It's a sculptural piece now. Like I evolved the pieces from the walls of outdoors to now sculptural paintings in, you know, large spaces. So the West Side Johnsons, that came about a little differently. So,
well, let's talk about serving tea
okay.
First, because we're on that piece, and this was a recreation of the mural that was destroyed in Miami, right? So so this one, since we're also talking about the black body and the lack of safety there, this piece, the figure in it is wearing a shirt saying, "I declare sovereignty over my body." And there's other messages in here. And as you're saying, it's also sculptural. There's fabrics hanging from this. So this is a really powerful work. The figure is also staring directly, you know, in a very confrontational way, right at the viewer. So let's talk about this, because of course this relates to and is very much an activist, you know, image in my mind, because it relates to what you just said, that the black body, a woman's black body, or perhaps anybody of color is never entirely safe. And so what's happening in this work? Because you're declaring sovereignty over my body, the figure says, but I assume that's also your body and has a larger message, right?
Yes. So the original piece, painted in Miami, still titled Serving Tea, I was paying homage to two people, right? The first person was where I got the title from, Serving Tea, T-E-E. I have a friend, she's a writer and now interdisciplinary artist. Her name is Scheherazade W. Parrish, who also resides, born and raised, also a girl raised in Detroit. So every Black History Month, she wears T-shirts that educate, if you will, you know, for the culture T-shirts. And she calls, and she make posts every day for 28 days straight with a different T-shirt, and she calls it Serving Tea. That's her hashtag. So I was paying her homage by, you know, having my subject, who I paint often, her name is Johnny, wearing this T-shirt. And the T-shirt was actually the first graffiti artist of note. His name is Daryl Cornbread McRae. He's still alive. But in the 60s, he was a 12-year-old boy in Philly and a foster child. And, he's the first graffiti artist of modern graffiti of note. Like, his story is, like, he was using spray cans, you know, to spray his name everywhere. Cornbread, cornbread, cornbread. He had read in the obituary section of a newsletter or a paper, his local paper, and he saw his name, like, that he was dead. Daryl McRae, right? Daryl Cornbread McRae, or Daryl McRae was deceased, right? So he knew he wasn't deceased, so what he did was break into the Philly Zoo and spray paint cornbread on the, and he spray painted cornbread on the side of an elephant. And so this is back in the 60s. So I was really giving homage to paying homage to him, because I painted like a portrait of him on her T-shirt, and she's literally holding tea as well. Like, so smoke coming out of this teacup. he's on his face is on the t-shirt along with a piece of his tag, corn, right? And I really didn't think that graffiti artists would mess up my stuff because I'm giving homage to, I'm paying homage to the first graffiti artist.
Right,
but
right.
That's not how the world works because they just saw space and opportunity. Like, and they just destroyed everything. They even covered up my name. As high as they could get, that's how high they sprayed. They sprayed whatever they sprayed, like covered up my artwork. So, and word is like the, and I know it was because a couple other artists that reside in Miami confirmed it. Like literally, I cleaned it up as much as I could before I left Miami on that trip. But 2 days after I got home, the wall was completely painted over. Yeah, they completely covered it. So, but yeah, that's what birth serving tea, the actual painting. And so I just took it further. Like, okay, we're evolving this piece, but what does that mean? It's already tea, so, ooh, maybe I could, like, sculpt her T-shirt out of T-shirts, right? And I just took it further. Every time I have an idea, I have one of those brains, I just have to feed the idea some sort of way, right? So we're sculpting this skirt out of t-shirts. But what does that mean? Oh yeah, we could put all of these sayings, whereas for Scheherazade, they're inspirational sayings or they're funny sayings, whatever. But I could actually put my experiences on these shirts. Like, and I'm serving these teas up, but I'm also sipping on tea. So it's really a piece that shows what pieces of what I might have gone through, not even might have, what I have gone through, instances that have occurred in my life, things that people have said. But I'm okay because I'm still sitting here sipping tea. Like, all of these things, they built me, they made me stronger, and especially now post-40 Sydney, I am relaxed. I'm not letting any of these things bother me any longer. If I could control it, it's not going to bother me. And that's really the point of the piece. It's really that reclamation, you know, I am reclaiming me, every piece of me, especially the mental me, because all of these things people say and or do to us, they destroy us mentally first, and then our mental really destroys our bodies. Like, our gut issues start, you know, like, it's really, the mental affects the whole body, you know. And so once you can reclaim your mental state, you can really, you have more control overall.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah, I agree, of course. And so some of these things you're talking about, you know, like the interior you, what's happening. And also in here, though, there's part of this statements in here, the phrases are body-shaming phrases, right? I thought your body would be better than that. You're a 7. And more phrases that are on this painting that are specifically not about your interior. They're about, you know, they're about things about your body that people are saying. And so, you know, you're embracing all of this, but it sounds like it's on a number of levels. It's on a spiritual or psychological or very soulful level where it's about reclaiming all of this, but it's also about pushing back against this kind of, notion that people have that they it's a different notion of safety that you spoke about earlier, right? This is a notion of being judged and how you manage that, especially physically, is one of the more painful ways of being judged because we don't forget what people say about us, right? It's really hard to forget what people say.
Right.
So I'm just asking about this is a physical level as well as an internal, very personal and emotional level, right?
Yes, and because when we do speak about creating safe spaces or what is a safe space, we only consider like physical violence, right? But we don't consider the mental violence of ill statements, like the body shaming statements, the misgendering statements, you know, if you're trans or, you know, part of the LGBTQ community, like though being safe, not having somebody, you know, call you a name, like an offensive name or even your dead name, like safe space all around is really what I'm trying to create, you know, or really emphasize. It's not just about physicality. It is about mental, and it's just as important. I don't think either one of them, I don't think it's a hierarchy to the importance of either, really, because they both can affect you physically, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, that's very powerful. And so let's talk about another piece in the show, bereavement, and it's with a question mark and a parentheses after that, non-binary. And this, of course, is a portrait, a very beautiful one. This also feels like it's asking a question of some kind, correct?
Yes, because the piece started off with the feminine piece. It was for this show, there are drawings and paintings for the bereavement series. So the bereavement series actually is an evolution of a mural that I painted during Essence Festival down in New Orleans back in 2019. It was for Motor Company. They had like an art theme that year. And, you know, they hired me to paint a mural for the festival. And it could really be just my work. So I'm thinking, okay, so I had a generic good idea, the unmasking, because it's very popular right now. So I had same subject, Johnny, because I paint her often, literally all over the world. I had her literally just taking off an African mask. It could have meant anything because the idea of unmasking is very popular right now. So I found a generic mask that it would be very quick for me to paint, and I painted the mural in like 2 days. But it was really a good generic idea. So the evolution of it is, okay, what is this mask? I had to be very specific. And why is this mask? Because really as humans, especially I feel like every type of human, wherever you are in this world, has a daily mask that they put on, that they're forced to put on, even if you really don't acknowledge that you're being forced to wear it. You know what I'm saying? Like, say you wake up grumpy, but you still have to walk into work pleasant. You know what I mean? They even, right. If you work for the airlines, if you're a gate agent or a flight attendant, they even have a sign that says, put on your mask or put on your face. Like, it's a mirror before you walk out, and then put on your face, right? We all put on faces. So I tasked myself, what is a black woman mask that we're constantly forced to wear? Because everybody is forced to wear a mask. And I'm looking through all of these masks, these African masks, and, of course, the warrior mask seemed like the one that I would go for. Because, of course, the strong black woman is that dangerously common trope, you know? So I wanted to stay away from that. But I found the African happiness mask, and I said, oh, this is the mask. Because in whatever circumstance that we're in, I don't care if our babies are dead at our feet, the expectation of black women specifically, and this is from the world, is for us to have a look of pleasantry. Like, we better not have the look of the actual emotion on our face. Or it's like, oh, you're an angry black woman, you're this, you're that. We get accused of being all of these things. So the happiness mask is the one that really I started with that was the most important for us to unmask, right? But that was very specific to a woman, to a black woman. So the more I thought about this idea, I'm having conversations with my non-binary artists during this time because I actually created this piece during my ISCP residency here in New York back in 2022. I still didn't know what the mask looked like or felt like because in my head it was a painting. But New York has this beautiful place called Materials for the Arts, which I got to experience during my stay here, and I grabbed these just non-medical, non-surgical masks, right? They were pink, right? I didn't even know what I was going to use them for when I grabbed them. I wasn't even thinking about this actual piece. But during my stay here, the Uvalde shooting happened and the Buffalo shooting happened. The Buffalo shooting happened first. Mentally, I kind of kept it out. I never, like, engaged with it. But the Uvalde shooting happened a few weeks later, and I couldn't ignore anymore. And I'm sitting in New York. I live in Detroit, of course. I'm in this tiny apartment, and I'm really dealing with all of this grief by myself. Like, it's really, I wanted to go home. I'm sitting hurting about these children, about these black people that just got murdered just for being at the grocery store. I'm thinking about my mother. I'm thinking about my family, and I really want to go home. But so I was angry. So the next morning, I got up early. I went to Blick in Brooklyn. I bought up every red paint marker I could find and some acrylic gel. And I went back to the studio and I painted angrily these happy faces on all of these masks. Like, that's when the idea really hit me. This is the expectation. I'm supposed to just go back to the studio for my studio hours. And these other people here might not even give a damn about what's happening. So I'm dealing with all of this grief by myself. And I still have to put on the face of pleasantry because I'm in this space that's, you know, it's a studio, but it's still a conservative kind of space. I can't, like, let loose and just tear everything up. That's what my emotions want to do. But I can angrily make these happy masks. And I just got to sculpting. Like, literally my anger guided that mask. So I literally sculpted the happiness mask out of happiness mask. And that really pushed me to do the other pieces, which was the masculine and then the non-binary. Because, it's, of course, the masculine is a whole different mask. Because men aren't supposed to show anything, really, but anger. Like, all of these emotions, for some reason, they say, oh, women are emotional, da-da-da-da-da. But anger is a whole-ass emotion that often gets, you know, put to the side when it's you talking about men. So for that mask, I use workman's materials, like reflective gear. I use a lot of camouflage fabrics. Because you're supposed to really, as a man, your expectation is to just be, you know. You can be everything except happy, you know what I'm saying, or sad. You have to be either just straight face or angry. That's the only two emotions that we allow. So I built his mask out of those materials. Oh, also, as a black man, too, in Detroit, you got to be fresh. You can't just, you have to have on, you know, you have to have on the right clothes. You have to have the right persona, you know, when you walk out of the house. And for the non-binary mask, I made it reflective material because it's really a mirror. The expectation is, there is really no expectation of how they behave. It's really the misgendering. And so when you misgender someone, you really are just looking into a mirror and acknowledging them how you want to acknowledge them, not how they acknowledge themselves. So that's why the piece, the painted piece, is the painting that that Lisa chose. You know, because the color palette plus the materials, and so the other two will be presented as charcoal drawings, and the non-binary piece will be the actual painting.
Wow, that's a great story, and so much in there. I want to ask you about one other piece, of course, the West Side Johnsons, which it seems completely yet another kind of emotion and feeling we're talking about, you know, or you were just talking about feelings that men can express and women can express, and this particular painting has both men and women in it in a state of what looks like tremendous joy.
Yes, so those are my aunts, my mother and her siblings. My mother was one of 12. She's number 9 of 12 children. And so the original photograph was taken July 4th, 1978, exactly a year and 2 days before I was born. But my sister had just been born. She was a month old at the time. So at that time, the 12 siblings, 2 children had just been born, so they were getting together for 4th of July as a family reunion of sorts because, of course, with 12 grown people, they were all over this, they were all across the country and even international at that point in time. So they were getting together to, you know, celebrate, to have a family reunion. We celebrate these children. So it rained that day, so they were supposed to have the family reunion at a park. But it rained that day, so they ended up at my Uncle Maurice, the man that's smiling the hardest in the painting, at his home. And so they gathered to take that photograph. And the woman in the middle is the youngest girl, and they kind of had to surround her because even now she's 67 and she still will, like, put her hand up you know, in front of her face if a camera is pulled out. So they kind of pushed her. It's crazy. They kind of forced her to take that photo, but she actually made the photo in the end. So how it became a painting is back, I want to say back in 2021 again, a filmmaker, her name is Juanita Anderson, a documentary filmmaker and professor in Detroit, Juanita Anderson, wrote a proposal. PBS had the In the Making, the American Masters In the Making shorts available. Like you could write a proposal, send in a proposal. They were choosing, I want to say, 9 applicants. And she, to feature, to highlight an artist. And she had wrote a proposal wanting to highlight me. And she got it. She got accepted, you know, she got chosen by PBS and the American Masters to do it, and she wanted to film me painting something. But at the time, I didn't have anything to paint. I had literally just had an opening a week prior and went prior to her wanting to shoot, and I literally didn't have anything to paint. But I'm like, I've always kind of been obsessed with that photo, wanted to tackle it. It just never... I didn't think my skill level was there yet, you know, the years prior me even thinking about that piece. But I'm like, I think I'm there now. I could just paint this. So I really painted it. I started it to be filmed, painting it. But once I completed it while I was at the ISCP residency, I knew it was going to be a central part of the show. Because it wasn't just the painting. Once I completed the painting, I realized it was bigger than the painting. I wanted to recreate the home. Like my uncle's house, because he passed away in 2020, but his house had never changed over 50 years. Like literally the same avocado green paint, the original carpet, the original appliances. Like it's his house is still to this day a time capsule. So I wanted to recreate that experience because, of course, when you go into museums, you see how aristocrats used to live. They have those spaces roped off all the time. But the 1970s black family, I feel like that was a very specific, or even 70s decor period is a time that also needs to be roped off and represented in, like, a museum space. So for the original showcase of that work, I actually had the facade of a house built. Where you could walk in, it was like a you could imply two-story home from the outside. You had the siding, you had a window, and you walked in through the door. And you can sit on the furniture, and so even here, the insulation. So we don't have the house built, but the insulation is still the same, like with the mantle, the couches, the coffee table. So it's really a feeling when you walk into the room. I want people to feel familiar. Yeah,
that's how it feels. It feels like you're almost included in this family. You know, it's a warm look they're all giving the viewer.
Definitely. Yeah. And you can participate with the piece. You know, because you can sit down. You get, you know, you could breathe in the space.
Right. I love that. I want to thank you so much for talking to me about this today. There's one more question I want to ask, a little off topic, but I'm wondering what you're reading at the moment. I'm always curious.
So what I'm reading now is a fiction book. It's called Children of Blood and Bone. And please forgive
you
me because the author is not coming to my head right now.
That's okay. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for your talk today. Thanks for this beautiful show you're putting together. And there's more here, information for all listeners who want to learn more and go see the show. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.